I made many visits over a few years, enough that I lost track of how often I'd gone. But it wasn't until the third time I visited the Sistine Chapel that it all started to change. It was March, and the shifting season offered its familiar hints of renewal. No matter that the seasons change and spring arrives every year, I can't help but respond to it with optimism. And so I set out that morning for Vatican City on a whim, without any heavy hopes or sense of obligation. I had an unexpected free day, and I thought, why not? I made my way through the rooms and corridors of the Vatican museums, trying not to linger, trying not to engage too much too soon, and risk ending up exhausted before I even got there. When I stepped into the Sistine Chapel that morning, it was quite full, though not as jammed as the first time I saw it the summer before, when the space felt hot with the exhalation of hundreds of miserable souls. It was still full enough that I bumped into people, and they bumped into me, as we moved around with our heads bent uncomfortably backward. A couple of women sat on the floor and leaned back to stare at the ceiling more comfortably, but an official, known unofficially as a shusher, indicated that they should rise. He and other shushers moved through the crowd of upturned faces whispering shush and silencio, reminding us that the Sistine Chapel is a place of worship and not an art gallery. A priest quietly asked a middle-aged English woman who was with another middle-aged English woman and two young children to stop taking photos. "Why?" she asked, not quietly. "Because this is a holy place," he answered. "I still don't see why," she said to the other woman as the priest moved on. "It's not hurting anything."
"They just want you to buy the postcards," said the second woman.
A man looked down at his shoes and muttered to his companion that he needed to get out of there. He needed coffee. He'd seen enough. Let's go already. A woman pointed to the central panels and said to her young companion, "Look at that. That's famous. And there, that's famous." She indicated Adam in the center. "Oh, and that one's really famous."
"Shush," said the shushers.
"Silencio."
When the art critic Robert Hughes came to Rome to work on his last book, which was all about the city's art and architecture, he visited the crowded Sistine Chapel, and he too fretted a little about the difficulty of seeing it, in part due to the behavior of other people. He urged museum goers everywhere to relax in front of a piece of artwork, to look at it quietly, to notice the details, allow your eyes to wander over a painting or sculpture, and keep your thoughts to yourself. It doesn't have to be a reverential silence. Just allow yourself to quietly contemplate the work in front of you and just shut the fuck up, please, pretty please. I tried to obey Hughes's orders while resisting an urge to quote him loudly. I had only recently begun looking at this famous frescoed ceiling. Living in Rome means I can go with relative ease and almost whenever I want, and yet for a long time I didn't. I never quite felt up to the intellectual challenge. I didn't want the experience to be superficial, but I didn't know how it could be otherwise. When friends mentioned having seen the Sistine Chapel, I felt an aversion to even listening. I had a sense that religious art could have nothing to say to me, that its concerns were not mine. In fact, I felt a twinge of unexamined hostility toward the Christian content of Michelangelo's frescoes, while at the same time, I wanted to understand their artistic merit. There was apprehension mixed into it too, and the slight concern that these frescoes might be genuinely meaningless in the 21st century to a person like me, though I preferred to think that I wouldn't understand them than to think there was no longer anything there to grasp. In sum, I was conflicted, and for a long time it didn't seem like a conflict I really needed to resolve.